Hello, and welcome to The Canon Cast, a weekly podcast from The Canon, SB Nation's one and only blog covering your Columbus Blue Jackets. I'm PD, and with me today are Eric Seeds and Elaine Shercliffe. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. We have a lot to talk about today. It's a very exciting week as the Blue Jackets have defeated the Toronto Maple Leafs in five games in the qualifying round, and now advance on very little rest to face the Tampa Bay Lightning in the official first round of the playoffs. Of course, a rematch of last year's first round series. So first, we're going to start with the Toronto series. Seeds, I seem to recall before the series, you had predicted the Jackets would win it in four games. It took them five games. So what matched your expectations in terms of why you thought they would win? And what about the series surprised you?
Well, for 57 minutes of Friday night's game, they were going to win it in four games. And then the team decided to totally melt down. I know a lot of you guys were blaming me. Last time I checked, I wasn't on the ice and I didn't take stupid penalties in overtime and complain at the refs. So I'm not responsible for losing game four.
I went to bat for you on Twitter.
Appreciate you, Elaine. So what matched my expectations were that the Jackets were able to play their forechecking game for the majority of the series and limit Toronto's chances at 5-on-5. It's how they beat Tampa last year. It's how they just beat the Leafs. The Jackets at 5-on-5, so you know, without Toronto's empty net and without Toronto on the power play, Toronto shot sub 2% in the series. That's how you win. That's how you win. They held Marner in check. They held John Tavares in check for the most part. And outside of Auston Matthews going hog wild in game two, they mostly held him in check. The Jackets were able to keep the Leafs star the Maple Leafs all-stars off the score sheet generally. And for the most part, stay out of their own way outside of, you know, some headaches in game two and the meltdown in game four. The Jackets, while they might have played a dull series by Toronto standards, who once you see apparently high-flying 6-5 games and nothing resembling a defense whatsoever, the Jackets played their game, stuck to their identity, the identity they've had for much of the year, regardless of who was in net, regardless of who was in the lineup. Every player bought in and did what they needed to do to win, and the Jackets pulled it out. I'm shocked that Bjorkstrand had as bad of a series as he did. That was the most surprising thing for me, and I'm sure we'll touch on that later. But for the most part, what didn't surprise me was the Jackets just stuck to their identity and were, at the end of the day, the better team over five games.
Same question for you, Elaine. How did this match or deviate from your expectations?
I had no clue how to feel, just because I've seen both teams' farm teams play so much. I mean, we play them eight games during the season, and then last year we played them in the second round of the playoffs.
And the teams play similar styles, right?
And they both
relative
play
to the current club,
styles. Yeah. Right? And in the playoffs last year, they had Sheldon Keefe as their coach, so. The system went up from both angles, and I've seen both teams mail it in when they feel like they've lost it. And I've seen both teams play balls to the walls. And I was unsure. I was like, either one of these teams is getting swept or it's going all the way to five games. But even then, it was such like a crapshoot. I didn't think there would be two games in a row of overtime, but you know, that's my luck. I wasn't really surprised by much. Keith made some interesting decisions, like keeping the money line out in game five. That was weird. He played right into the Jackets' hands and proved that he was not 100% sure how to crack them. So
the thing that surprised me is that Toronto actually played much better defense than I thought they would. You know, because the narrative coming into the series was so much about, well, the Jackets play defense and the Maple Leafs play offense. You know, they've got this great offense and what's going to happen. But that, you know, if the Jackets could get anything going offensively, the Leafs would have no way to stop them with their defensive core or whatever. But even though the Jackets are obviously far from a world-beating offensive team, they still struggled to get close to the net or anything like that. So Toronto, I thought, was basically playing Blue Jackets hockey.
And they played it badly.
Well, but I thought they played it better than I thought they would.
Right.
What ended up being their downfall is that they were playing Blue Jackets hockey, but, you know, it's like that quote from Dark Knight Rises where you're like, oh, you live in the dark, but I was born in it. You know, like, we were born in the dark. We were born playing Blue Jackets hockey. There's just no way for them. Yeah. There's just no way for them to top us when it came to that. But, they did pretty well keeping what offensive talent we have from doing too much for long stretches of time, really, I thought.
True.
It was an up and down series, roller coaster. Game two was a disaster. We don't really need to talk about game two, do we, right?
Move on.
Moving on to game three, which started out looking like it was going to go very badly. And midway through,
Pierre-Luc Dubois decided to take over and win the game on his shoulders.
Before that, the Leafs went up 3-0. Nick Robertson, their own version of the MVP, newly arrived rookie, scored a goal that was pretty soft on Korpisalo. He had a great series, but that one was kind of soft. And so Torts made a goalie change. And the Jackets came back, thanks to Pierre-Luc Dubois. And Elvis, stood tall in net during that game. So do you guys think that goalie change mattered? Or do you think the team still would have come back even if Korpisalo had stayed in net in game three?
Oh, I've said it before and I'll keep saying it. Sometimes you just have to change a goalie out to get to get the confidence to change, to get the team to get their heads out of their asses. I mean, it's not that Korpisalo played awful. It's that everyone else was either not trusting him or the offense also wasn't playing well in that one game. So the defense had to step into the offensive role, and then Korpi had to play a completely different game. So once they make a change, you start thinking, oh, I should probably change my game as well. And also Elvis came in with a little bit different confidence. Like when Korpi came into game five, he got on the ice and he was like dancing. You knew he was in it to win it because he was like, I am the Tiger, baby. Let's do this. Like, so I think that a goalie change always changes the momentum on the ice.
Yeah, Seeds, what did you think about that and Korpi versus Elvis in this series?
I mean, we don't win this series if both of them don't play well. I know Elvis gave up 3 goals at the end of game 4. For those of you who may not have heard the news, I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast has. Elvis is hurt and is out indefinitely at this point. I don't know if he got hurt during that game, if he was hurt in the last couple of minutes and just trying to see it out or what was going on. I don't know. But Elvis played well for most of game 4. He absolutely played well in game 3 when he came in relief. And I think it might have been Allison Lucan who was talking about this on Front Nationwide last week. But Elvis coming in and immediately making that play where he went down and broke up that seeming breakaway for Toronto, like just skated out and broke that up.
Yeah, he came out past the faceoff circles. It was crazy.
Right. He was up near the blue line, but that kind of like, that might have just helped settle the team down. This goalie's back here. He's got our back. And then that enabled the offense to kind of, loosen up and play a little more freely. And then obviously Pierre-Luc Dubois decided to take over and had a monstrous game 3. I think the goalie change was necessary. I think it was the right call to start him in game 4. And I wish Elvis well getting back healthy here shortly. Because if this team's going to make a deep run, they're going to need him.
Sure. I think that it's not a coincidence that the team was able to score 7 unanswered goals at one point between games 3 and 4 when Elvis was in net because of his ability to play the puck is a weapon that I think is very important to this system. He essentially becomes like a third defenseman and it can really help the breakouts with his ability to get the puck up ice. And that's just not something that's in Korpisalo's repertoire. But I do have to give credit to Korpisalo. When he was in, this was, it's probably not a stretch to say the best we've seen him play. He was a lot more settled than he usually is. He was not flopping around in the crease like he sometimes does, which, I mean, he's a crazy athlete, so he's able to make those plays, but I thought he was a lot more settled in. And yeah, Elaine, you're right. He was totally locked in game 5.
Right.
No one was going to take that game from him.
Right. Just wait till 2016 Korpisalo rears his ugly head. It'll be freaking amazing.
I was going to say, I was oddly settled in game 5 last night because He looked strong and was out challenging shooters. He was at the top of his crease, limiting angles. He only really got beat once, and it was when John Tavares hit the post with a wide open net. I was Korpisalo played outstanding in this series. I think we also need to credit our blue line for how well they played. I know the Jackets lost Game 4 for a myriad of reasons. I'll never be able to prove this, but I'm sure that if Zach Werenski plays his last 9 minutes, the Jackets close that game out. They close that game out in 4 games. Credit to Z and Ryan Murray for coming back and playing both of them playing a crucial minutes in Game 5, Z getting the game-winning goal. But I was very impressed with pretty much everyone responsible for keeping the puck out of the net for Columbus, be it a defenseman, a forward on the back check, or one of the goaltenders. The Jackets did what they needed to do to beat the Leafs, and they had a plan, they had a system, and they executed it near perfection for three and a half games.
Yeah, so I want to give them credit as a team for their mental fortitude. So in game three, you know, they're down 3-0, but I think it's a situation they've been in a number of times over the last few years. They know that they could erase a deficit like that, and they did. They had confidence in what they were doing, and they came back. And now, obviously, the last 4 minutes of game four were in regulation were a disaster on their part. And I had concerns after that about, oh my gosh, you know, Toronto came back, they're going into game five. Is this going to be, you know, is that going to be a shattering kind of thing? But then Sunday morning, there are press conferences. And Jones and Bjorkstrand were there representing the players, and then Torts did his thing. And I was struck by the confidence that they had. They were very cool and calm and, like, not bothered at all by what had happened on Friday night, which was the first indication, because I was nervous on Sunday. But that gave me an indication, like, oh, they're not nervous about this at all. Like, that's game four has no issue. And Torts said something like, you know, I think we have the momentum, which I thought was a ridiculous statement, because how how can you say you have the momentum when you just, you know, blew a game, you know? But I think what he meant was the Jackets were playing their game and had a lot of success in games three and game four playing their game. And if they just did that again, they were probably going to win game five. And I think that's what happened. So, Elaine, what were your emotions going into game five and then during game five?
Well, first of all, going into game five, I was really tired. It just it reminded me of what it was like during the Monsters season and why I get so burnt out. Because, you know, game three and four, you know, they go into overtime, and then they have a game less than 24 hours later.
Right.
But in Monsters Land, that game would probably be at 3 p.m. instead of 8 p.m.
And there are back-to-backs in the AHL playoffs, right?
Yes.
We're just not used to that in the NHL postseason.
Right. So then, you know, you have that day off, but I, you know, also working and trying to, that Friday, watching the game Friday goes into overtime, doing all the moving that I'm doing. And then Sunday's game, I was like, this is fine. We're fine. I'm fine. We're all fine. And I wasn't, because I didn't know how to feel, because I was optimistic. But I also was like, I was so confident that we were going to win that fourth game. Hmm. Yeah, that fourth game. I didn't want to get like ahead of myself and then be deflated.
Right.
So then those final few minutes of the game, I still was like, be cool, keep it together. But
well, that's like, even when Foligno got his empty netter, there was like, what, 40 seconds left? I'm like, this isn't over. They can still score 3 goals. Like,
I was like, I grew up watching the Hawks play. I know what can happen.
Honestly, I was coming down the final stretch after Foodie scored. I wasn't honestly all that worried. I don't know. I just felt like there was no way they were going to let that happen to them twice in a row. Mm. There was no way. This team, like you guys just said, I don't really have much to add outside of, I just also want to credit their mental fortitude. That was my biggest question going into the game. How would they respond on a tight turnaround after blowing that lead in such horrific fashion? And Torts had them ready. The leadership in the room had them ready. Credit to that team for doing it.
I will say, I felt a lot better just after Werenski's goal, because I felt better about the Jackets playing with the lead. Because again, they're such a defensive team that, but you worry about, okay, where are the goals going to come from? So if they get a goal, then that's a good start. They can, right. they can work with that. They can hold on to that lead for a long time when they're playing like the way that they're playing, which ended up working out. And speaking of Werenski, quick plug, go to jacketscanon.com. We've got a link there to an entire collection of t-shirts from our friends at Breaking Tea that are officially licensed by Zach Werenski himself. So be sure to check that out and get a Werenski shirt now for the remainder of the playoff run.
There's plenty of room on the Zach Werenski bandwagon with me. You're welcome.
Make sure you cut off the sleeves though, because nothing is more awesome than having a muscle tank.
Especially the loose cannon shirt that features his mullet and his trash stash. It is tremendous.
Nothing says we support a dirtbag looking player than cut off sleeves.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right. So last bit on the Toronto series, who is the MVP of the series? Seeds?
Can I pick both goaltenders?
Sure.
Because, I mean, we don't win this series without both of them, and both of them were the most instrumental players in that series. Elvis made 21 saves on 21 shots when he came in Game 3, and for 57 minutes of Game 4 was a world beater. And Korpisalo obviously had shutouts in Games 1 and 5. I mean, they're the MVPs with a special... well, I'll let you guys go ahead.
All right, Elaine?
John Tortorella. I know in the beginning we were a little confused by his goalie choice, and then having Harrington play, which we won't talk about. but he is truly the reason why the guys have the mindset they do. He keeps preaching that mindset, even though sometimes he might be preaching it very aggressively. But sometimes that is what a player needs to hear in that manner. And then, you know, when Keith decided not to separate the money line, because that's what I'm going to keep calling them, he was like, okay, well, I guess we're now going to wear out your money line, and then we're going to attack the rest of your players, and Mitch Marner is going to have to play defense, and that's how it's going to be.
Yeah.
I think he handled this whole series very well. To me, they might not have won if they didn't have that coach who was in their ear firing them up. Like, PLD doesn't strike. I know people complain that he yelled at PLD on the bench, but PLD is not the kind of player who's gonna like thrive under someone going, oh gee, you are doing such a great job, or like, don't mess up next time. You know, his dad was a coach. His dad coached in the AHL for the Manitoba Moose, so that team was very aggressive. So I can only imagine how used to it and how much it like fuels his hate fire to be better by having someone draw him like that.
Yeah. And this is, you know, year three of Dubois being on towards his team. And I think they have a complete understanding of each other. And I think Torts knows that he can get aggressive like that, and that Dubois is going to take it the right way. And Dubois knows that Torts is giving him feedback that he needs to hear. Sometimes it's a little kick in the ass that he needs, and it works out. So I would say Dubois is probably my MVP, just to mix it up here. Obviously, hat trick in Game 3, which is incredible. I'm just sad that game couldn't be in Nationwide, because just imagine an overtime winner that caps a hat trick in Nationwide. The roof would have come off the place. That would have been amazing.
And with
people
an honorable mention,
thrown their bodies onto the ice instead of hats. They just would have just been like, yes!
throwing, you know, shirts and pants, just everything's going on the ice. And, you know, Dubois, I thought he played much better defensively than he has in a while. He's been used this year very much offensively minded. And I think Torts wanted him to improve his defensive game. And we saw it here. First two games, he was matched up a lot against Matthews. And, you know, for the most part, you know, he held his own there and kept Matthews from getting many clean looks. And
he thoroughly outplayed John Tavares in games 3 and 4.
Absolutely.
Because that's who he was primarily. He was primarily matched up against Tavares in those two games when the Jackets had the last change. And game 3, he had his hat trick. Game 4, the Jackets dominated the Leafs for the majority of that game. And Dubois, this series was the PLD coming out party, and like there were guys who were. I saw a tweet today about how I think it was Steve Simmons was complaining that, like, oh, Panarin and McDavid and Draisaitl aren't around anymore. Who's the NHL going to market? Crosby's out now. And it's like, well, maybe now you can market guys like I forget who quote tweeted it, but it was like there's still guys in this that you can market, like Kucherov and Stamkos, and PLD was mentioned, was named in this tweet, along with, you know,
Sebastian Aho.
Sebastian Aho.
The whole first line Svechnikov, of Boston.
Svechnikov, DeBrinket, you know. There's guys to market that aren't just Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, they're good players throughout the league, and yeah, Dubois definitely deserves to be counted as one of them. Quick honorable mention to Alexander Texier, who, coming off a back injury, hadn't played since January, and he was a force in this series, mostly playing with Dubois. He was tenacious on the forecheck, and that the winner in game three was a thing of beauty. Dubois got the goal, but Texier deserved that assist. He picked Tavares' pocket, skated down the ice, made a perfect pass right to the tape of Dubois, right at the blue line. Just an absolutely perfect play, and I'm really excited to see more from Texier going forward. And speaking of going forward, after this quick break, we'll talk about the series coming up with the Lightning. Okay, so now, in the time we have left, we're going to preview this series that's coming up against the Tampa Bay Lightning, a rematch of last year's series. But that seems like ages ago now at this point, does it not? And the teams are different. So yeah, Seeds, talk a little bit about how this Blue Jackets team is different from last year's Blue Jackets team that pulled off that historic upset.
Well, we didn't go all in at the trade deadline this year, and we don't have any major brand name household superstars, at least widely known across the league. Obviously, this is a team that lost Duchesne, Bobrovsky, Panarin, and Dzingel. last offseason, none of whom are, well, I guess Dzingel's still in the playoffs, but he didn't play in the first round against the Rangers, so one can be forgiven for forgetting him. But this is a Blue Jackets team that relies heavily, more heavily than they did even last year, on defense and goaltending. The Blue Jackets team this year does things, if at all possible. They work harder to get results. They make you work harder to get results, but they're still the same defensive team that you see that you saw last year against the Lightning. Does this mean Columbus can run it back? I don't know. I'm not going to predict that they will, but we've learned that the Jackets will at least be a tough out. I don't know if they're going to beat the Lightning there, but they're certainly going to be. You know, it's the way I look at this series is, I don't feel like Columbus will win. I just don't. I'll be blunt with you guys. But if the Jackets come out and punch Tampa Bay in the mouth and get the first goal or two in this series, and Tampa's suddenly down early in the first period, you better believe there's going to be some mind sweating on the Tampa Bay Lightning. This is also a weaker Lightning team than we saw last year. Last year we saw a team with Victor Hedman hurt. Hedman got hurt again over the weekend on a kind of a fluke play. It looks like he sprained his own ankle, but Hedman like went back to the locker room and was beating his stick and broke it against the stands. And this is also a team that's without Steven Stamkos for who knows how long. So while the Jackets come in a little banged up with Z hurt, missing Josh Anderson, obviously missing all those superstars, the Lightning aren't exactly the world-beating 128-point team they were in the 18-19 regular season. So it might be a war of attrition. I don't think it'll be a 4 or 5 gamer, but we'll see what happens.
So Elaine, in terms of maybe the mental side of the game, would you give the edge to Tampa seeking revenge or Columbus knowing that Tampa is a team that they can beat?
I give the edge to the Jackets, but not for the way that you're saying it.
Okay.
I think that yes, they know that they can beat the team, but they also know that they're beatable. Like, the Jackets themselves are beatable. Mm. What we saw with the Maple Leafs and what we saw all season, even with all the injuries, is that they're very capable of taking what's given and working with it. And you have to have a strong mental standpoint to do that. So I think that is something that the Jackets have above Tampa Bay, but also they relied so heavily on the Monsters this year, and the Monsters showed out. They came up and they were like, hey, what's up? I'm here. We're going to score goals. And Tampa Bay didn't have as much of that. In Syracuse, which is Tampa Bay's farm team, they didn't have to deal with a ton of what the Monsters had to deal with this season, even with injuries in the farm team. So I think that the Jackets are just so prepared for anything because they're already like, we've already seen everything. So I think they're just ready.
Can I kind of piggyback off that for a little bit? I think that one other point that goes in the Jackets' favor here mentally is that they've been playing games that actually matter for the last week, and sure. Tampa has not. I know they set up these this round robin so that like the games would in theory matter, but if you watch those guys were skating at like 80%. It didn't look like Boston was world beaters in the regular season, and they didn't win a single game of the round robin.
Yeah,
Tampa did not look like world beaters in the round robin. The Jackets have had a chance to eliminate a team, failed miserably, and had their backs to the wall in an elimination game. So now while they're coming in on short rest, they're more mentally engaged. They've been skating at game playoff speed and have been playing that heavy playoff style hockey that we know Tampa struggled with last season. That can, like, if it takes the Leafs a period or two to get going, that may help Columbus steal game one. And then if you steal game one, it's, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you bring that up because, you know, one of the, I don't know if I'll call it an excuse, but maybe a factor in last year's series is that Tampa was so historically good that they had their spot in the playoffs locked up, you know, long before the end of the season. Even have the top seed locked up for a while. And so they were able to kind of coast down the stretch, maybe, you know, rest guys, you know, just, you know, save their engines for the playoffs. And then they maybe had trouble turning it on, whereas the Jackets had to fight just to get the 8th seed. And so I feel like you're saying that maybe there's a kind of similar factor here where Tampa, you know, knew their spot was going to be here, one of the top 4 seeds, whereas the Jackets had to fight to get to this point. Now, the question would be, has Tampa learned from last year how to more effectively... I don't assume we'll hear a lady shaking her head, so.
I think about how Tampa's always been this way, with the exception of John Tortorella's Tampa and with when Oren Kulis owned Tampa, which was all same time, around the same time. Other than that, Tampa has always gotten into this mode of complacency. And even if they know that they have to throw it all out there, the moment someone comes and jacks them in the face, they don't have the same type of fight that you would expect. So no, I don't think that they are, I think they say they're prepared, like air quotes prepared, to take on the Jackets. But I think their preparedness is, well, we're probably going to beat them because they're the Jackets.
Interesting. I'm not going to count that they will underestimate us. I think they are very familiar now with how we play the kind of hockey the Jackets are going to play. And I think there's going to be fire, because that was such an embarrassing series for them. So I think they're going to be ready for it. So it's prediction time. I'm going to say that Tampa takes this in 6 games. Yeah, I think this is going to be a hard series. But I think that, again, they've got the horses. They've got the, you know, elite. Even with Stamkos out, they've still got elite talent there. They're a lot deeper with the kind of forwards that they have than Toronto is. They have a much better defense than Toronto has, and they have an elite goaltender, which Toronto doesn't have. So I think they're going to be able to break through in some ways that Toronto was not able to. And it's a longer series, which also then generally favors the more talented team. So that's my pick. Elaine, what is your pick for the series?
I'm going to say that the Jackets are going to win in seven. That's because it's going to be my birthday on game seven, and I deserve to have both playoff hockey on my birthday and to watch the team that I cover win. I just deserve it, okay?
Yes.
Okay. So, but also, I just think that the Jackets, they have it this year. They have it. They had it last year. And just because they lost a bunch of quote-unquote key players, it doesn't mean that they still don't have it, because they were able to replace every single one of those key players. Not so much to the extent of, like, what Panarin brought offensively to the team, but, you know, they replaced the goal. They hands down replaced the goalie. You know, Duchesne turned out to not be as important as we thought he had been to us. So yeah, I strongly believe that the Jackets are going to win, but also I'm saying this because I just really want playoff hockey, birthday hockey. So, but yeah, I mean, but like I said, I just think, and the Jackets know what they're doing. Like Boone Jenner, the way that he is rushing the net and he is playing until the whistle blows. People stop all the time, and he's now convincing and getting other people on the team to realize that you're going to pick up that puck. You have to pick it up. Even if the goalie looks like he has it, if you didn't hear that whistle, and there's no way you can't hear a whistle right now because there's nobody in there. If you don't hear the whistle, you need to poke at it. You need to take it away. You need to flip it over his pads, something. And it's starting to catch on. So if they can do that, that'd be great. My other prediction is there's going to be like five fights. So five of them in one game. There's going to be a line brawl. So excited. It's going to be like old time hockey.
Love it. All right, seeds.
Well, I got bad news, Elaine. I am not picking Tampa on your birthday. I've got Tampa in five because, yeah. Do you want to know what the Jackets lost when they lost Artemi Panarin last year? Offense. If you guys remember last year in the Tampa series, we went 5-for-10 on the power play in that series. We went 50%. Did you guys know offhand what we did in the Toronto series on the power play? 0-for. 0.0%. Full Blutarski. The Columbus Blue Jackets are a terrible, not good offensive team, and Tampa is good offensively. They are better than the Leafs defensively, they are better than the Leafs in goal, and they are better offensively. I think Columbus has enough to make each of the five games competitive, and obviously I think they're going to steal one. I just don't think they have enough consistent offense to make it a series. Duchesne had a bad season in Pittsburgh, Duchesne had a bad season down in Nashville, but what he allowed for Columbus to do was for them to healthy scratch Alexander Winberg in the Tampa Bay series last year. Alexander Winberg, by every single metric possession-wise, was the worst Blue Jackets forward that we iced in the Toronto series. And he is now counted on to... At even strength. Well, yeah, okay. And he was, regardless, he is going to be counted on to play 14-ish minutes a night, 11 or 12 at even strength, and he offensively is so bad that he drags whoever is down with him. For example, Oliver Bjorkstrand spent some time with Winberg in the series, and Bjorkstrand, despite leading all Blue Jackets forwards in goals this year, was not on the ice for a goal during the Toronto Maple Leafs series.
Yeah.
That's real bad.
Yeah. They need to get him going.
The Blue Jackets need... What I'm getting at is I want the Blue Jackets to win. Believe me, I do. I just don't think they have the offensive horses to keep up, especially when you're relying on some guys with subpar talent to carry them there.
Interesting. All right. Well, if you have
bench Winberg and play Stenlund.
Stenlund.
If you have any issues with what he just said there, you can tweet him at Eric_Seeds. Please let him know what you think about that.
I'll be waiting for your replies, Alex Winberg.
So that's all we have for this week. Be sure to check in next week. We'll be talking about the first four games of the series. These games are coming fast and furious. Be sure to check out all of our coverage at jacketscanon.com. Subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. Leave us a rating, leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. And as always, thanks to Angela Purley for our theme music. You can check out more about her music, more about her upcoming shows at angelapurley.com. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.